Welcome to the Tanakh Podcast. Today, Shoftim, Chapter 11. Today we studied the famous story of Yiftach, Yiftach Part 1 today. And Yiftach is the man of the great vow, the vow to sacrifice his daughter. In fact, Yiftach is in many ways the man of words. Even the words Yiftach, he opens his mouth. And the rabbis see the word petach, a petach of a neder, is the way that you can undo a neder, you can find an opening in a promise. And the big question which hovers over the Yiftach story is whether Yiftach Jefti needs to keep his promise. What's his story? The Ammonites in the Transjordan have been oppressing Israel for 18 years. They even crossed the Jordan, as we read in chapter 10, verse 9, to fight Yehuda and Binyamin and Ephraim. They seem quite a formidable enemy. And when things are tough, the elders of Gilad come and approach Yiftach. Now, Yiftach had already been something of a persona non grata. He has very dubious birth. He's the son of an ishazona, the son of a prostitute. And he runs away to the badlands of Manasseh and gathers a group of merry men, a group of anashim reikim, violent men. And when the elders of Manasseh have trouble, they call him back. And it's at this point that we see Yiftach as an expert negotiator. He says to them, "Why did you even come to me?" And when they discuss with him their need for him to be a military captain, he insists that they remain true to their promise, which is in verse 1 of chapter 11, which is that, the last verse of chapter 10, which says that whoever will fight Bnei Amon will not only be a katzin, will not only be a military leader, but also a rosh. And in this way, he shows that he knows how to stand his ground. He wants to be a Rosh, he wants political power, and he also wants to be the leader of the military. And why is that so important for him? We see that in the next segment of the chapter, where he sends a diplomatic letter, he sends messengers to the head of Bnei Amon, asking him for his claims. And when the king says that the land is really mine, Yiftach shows that he has tremendous knowledge, historical knowledge, and with real virtuosity, he shows that he is a master of all of the documentation, all of the history, and proves that the king of Ammon doesn't have a leg to stand on. It's at this point that Yiftach goes to war. Vatihi al Yiftach ruach Hashem. The spirit of God is on Yiftach. And as he goes to war, vayidar Yiftach ned al Hashem vayomer, Yiftach makes a vow and says, im naton titenet b'nei Ammon biyadi, if you deliver Ammon in my hands, and he's now going to promise that whatever comes out of the doors of his house to meet him, when I return in peace, I will give that to God. And indeed, at the very next scene, Yiftach goes to fight Bnei Ammon, and he destroys them roundly, 20 cities, and has an absolute victory. And this 18-year occupation is now over. Until this point in the story, chapter 11, verse 33, everything seems great. Yiftach seems a fabulous leader, even though he's got a strange birth story, and even though he was as a young man exiled from the tribe of Manasseh, he seems to really understand what it takes to be a leader. He practices diplomacy before he starts shooting. And even when he goes to war, he engages in a religious promise and brings God into the picture. In fact, his vow here seems to mirror very, very closely what Bnei Israel do in Sefer Bamidbar, chapter 21, when they fight and they also make a promise. This seems to be an exemplary leader. But this is the point at which it all starts going wrong, because the minute he comes home from war, who should come out of his front door, but instead we hear, instead of an animal or something else, his daughter comes out to meet him, dancing. And it says she was his only child. He had no son, other son or daughter. And he sees her, tears his clothes, and says, "You have brought me low. You have betrayed me, for I've uttered a vow to God, and I cannot retract." And it's this notion of retraction, where he says, you know, I can't lashuv. Where's the example? V'lo uchal lashuv. In fact, this word lashuv seems to be a word which recurs throughout the story. And she says, interestingly enough, she says, "Okay, Father, you've uttered a vow to God. Do to me whatever you've vowed. If God has given you victory over your enemies, you have to fulfill your vow." And indeed, this is what it says in the text here. It continues and tells us that. She first says to him, "Give me 6 months and I will go down to the mountains. I will cry over my virginity, me and all my friends." And he says, "Go." And he sends her for 2 months and she goes and cries. And then, Miket Shnaim Chodashim, after 2 months, she comes back to her father and he performs his vow that he has vowed. V'hi lo yada'ish. And she didn't know a man, by Tichok b'Yisrael. And it was a statute in Israel. What does that mean? Miyamim yamina, from every single year, the girls of Israel would go to cry over Bat Yiftach 4 times a year. Here there's a great debate in the commentators. The commentators turn around and say, how could it be that he would actually kill his daughter? And therefore, there are even some commentators who say that this drama is that she goes out to the hills, she goes to cry, she cries for the fact that she's never going to get married, but really what she ends up doing is being in a secluded place. Girls go to visit her 4 times a year, but she's basically a living hermit, a widow who never gets married, and that's what she means. I will cry over my virginity, I will never have children, I will never get married. And she remains, he obviously didn't kill her, so says these commentaries. I think the Ramban is one of them. But instead she lived alone, basically having no life, away from society. But I don't think that is the pshat at all. The pshat would seem that it says he does his vow, that he actually kills her. And indeed, this is the approach in the Medrash Tanchuma, where the Tanchuma turns around and says, she cries out and she says, "I don't understand. Abraham was commanded by God to slaughter his son, and even he didn't slaughter him. Why are you slaughtering me?" And the Medrash has a tremendous sympathy for Bat Yiftach. And I guess the real question is, why is this so powerful? Why would he kill his daughter just for the sake of a vow? So first of all, let me say 2 things. The idea of a vow is a powerful one. Imagine that, chas v'shalom, somebody is sick and they say, "If I get better, I will give lots of money to charity." And indeed they get better and they don't give the money to charity. Then it's almost as like they're living in debt. They're living in debt because their very life has been on false pretenses. And the Torah itself and the rabbis take very, very seriously the notion of, they say, it's better never to make a vow than to make a vow and not keep it. Nedarai l'Hashem HaShalem, we say in Hallel. The idea being that if your life, your victory, has been on the pretense of like future promises, I better keep my future promises or else the very benefit that I got will be undermined and betrayed. In this case, the whole nation has been saved. And this is what she turns around and says. You made this vow, Hashem gave you victory. You're now in debt, you've got to pay back. So that's fascinating. The power of a vow. However, it seems very, very clear that this is an incorrect sense of priorities. Judaism develops a notion of Hatarat Nedarim. Already in the Torah, we have the notion that there are instances in which you can abrogate a vow or you can annul a vow. And that would definitely seem to be the preferred course of action here. So what happened? I think one of the possibilities is that there is an infiltration of pagan norms here, that some of the attitude of the pagan societies, remember, this is not a time when the Jewish people are particularly knowledgeable, educated, and what have you. And it would seem like this primacy, this championing of the vow, over the very value of human life is an inappropriate application of the laws of vows. Vows are serious, but certainly not more powerful than a human life. And who would ever come up with this scale of values, this ladder of priorities? And the answer is, this comes from outside Israel. The rabbis had a third explanation, and they said, it wasn't maybe some internal Jewish ethic, it wasn't an infiltration of foreign values, but it came from a sense of false pride on Yiftach's part. Yiftach could have gone to the Gadol Hador, could have gone to the rabbi, the high priest, whose name was Pinchas. But Yiftach was too proud to go to Pinchas. Pinchas was too proud to go to Yiftach. And as a result of which, this poor girl lost her life. Now, this topic of pride, false pride, ego, is going to come in as a central topic in tomorrow's class. So we'll pick up the story again there and try to say some more generic comments about Yiftach in tomorrow's podcast. Thank you for listening. See you then.